You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hi, everybody. This is Tobin Arthur, your host for Innovation for Alpha. And today I'm joined by Eric Goslow, who is the CEO, founder of a really interesting medical startup company that's got a fascinating story. They've got a great trajectory ahead of them called Transverse Medical. And I've gotten to know Eric and Transverse over the last year, and I wanted Eric to share his story with you, and both as an interesting story in itself, but also maybe some of the lessons that Eric's learning. So, Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tobin. Thanks for having me on today.
It's also fun. You are another Colorado startup, and we love the fact that Colorado's got more and more great health tech startups, of which you are one. So that makes it a little double bonus.
It certainly does. Yep.
Eric, why don't you tell us, just give us a brief introduction of your background. You've got an extensive background in medical device and med tech. And then why don't you introduce Transverse, and both for an audience that's a lay audience, as well as maybe for some of our more, clinical focused audience members.
Sure. Yeah. Like you mentioned, present CEO with Transverse Medical. But my experience with Transverse actually extends before that. I've been in the medical device space for probably over 26 years. I always joke, or there's a joke in the family, that actually I got my start when I was 5 years old, because I actually was a model for my dad's company, which he was one of the original startup officers for Valley Lab, which is another Colorado startup as well, up in Boulder, which we all know now as Medtronic. So just a small little history there, kind of got my start in medical devices when I was 5 years old. But fast forward, really, the professional side of things has been pretty much the last 26 years, sales and marketing, and Transverse has been my first CEO role. So took that as a co-founder, co-inventor, and startup, and working with the conceptual inventor, I kind of drew the short stick and took on the brunt of starting a startup and fundraising. And history's kind of been there for the last 9 years or so of development, and the ups and downs of all that. So Transverse now, what we're developed and what we're working on is PointGuard. And PointGuard is a cerebral embolic protection device. And that's designed to basically protect the brain during cardiovascular procedures. Our primary focus is structural heart right now, which has a lot of spotlight on it. Stroke rates range between 2 and 5%. That's within the literature. And so, anything above 1% is obviously not good. Our goal is to virtually eliminate or minimize stroke and try to get it down below 1%. And that's the optimum goal that we're striving for. So our solution is pretty elegant. And again, it's called the PointGuard. I can take a deeper dive on that if you've got any other questions on that.
Well, let's jump into that a little bit. So maybe explain, just backing up, and then we'll come back to the PointGuard. So talk a little bit about the migration in the industry from, say, SAVR to TAVR. Just a little bit specifically of what those are, and then kind of tie that into, what is it that's being protected? What are you trying to keep from the brain that ultimately is resulting in stroke that PointGuard is focused on?
Yeah, the complexity of whether surgical aortic valve replacement or transcatheter aortic valve placement, right? That's the TAVR procedure. It's a complex procedure in the sense, right? You're going in and you're replacing the valve. And when they do that, it's, for lack of better words, it's chaotic. You're going in there and you're just, destroying the old valve or replacing it with a new valve that goes inside of it. And so when that happens, there's a lot of debris shower and particles that break off. And that's just one aspect of what we're protecting against. So the PointGuard is designed to create that shield or that defense mechanism that's between the valve and what's happening in the aortic arch, and create that filter, that layer, to protect against the brain and debris. And we do have a capture capability that's integrated into the device, but the primary emphasis of our device is flexion or deflection and filtering. So there's other risks too, not just the valve being deployed, the actual act of going in with the interventional wires and catheters from the operator. All that has, you know, an impact potentially of releasing particles and debris that we go to the brain and cause a stroke.
What level of debris, for example, and to your point, and I had not really thought about this a lot until I learned a little bit more about these procedures. And then as I learned about point guard, it made it even more interesting. But when you think about debris floating through and these procedures getting done, is there a level of debris or size of debris that presents an acceptable risk, or is all debris potentially harmful?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the important message is you can't predict when stroke's going to occur, right? And it can take one micro piece of debris that causes a stroke, or you could have multiple pieces of debris, right? And if we think about debris too, just to define it a little bit for, you know, the folks that might be listening in, I mean, the particles of debris could be foreign material that break off from the valve itself, right? Or a catheter or a wire or something to that nature. It could be thrombus, it could be calcium, it could be plaque, right? So any particle or debris is foreign, right? And that's not good. You know, we want to minimize that, just have red blood cells that, you know, feed the brain and give it its cardiac output and oxygen. So, you know, that's the main breakdown of what the particles are and what go to the brain.
Perfect. So if you step back a little bit, what was it that gave you guys the idea for this? I mean, why were you thinking about debris and stroke and things of this sort?
Yeah, you know, it's a good story. And actually, the one of the co-founders is from the industry. He presently works, he and I met actually at Cordis when I was with them in the field carrying the bag, which is always fun, right? You learn a lot carrying the bag. But he and I were working together, or actually knew each other when I was out in Seattle. And he came to me with the concept. And the reason being was that his father-in-law had actually suffered from a stroke following a basic standard coronary intervention. And so his thought process was, you know, there's got to be a better way. And here I am, I'm in medical device sales. I'm in cardiovascular, but, you know, my father-in-law just, you know, had a stroke, and he was convinced that that stroke was a result of that procedure. And so, you know, that's how it kind of got its, you know, first start. And, you know, I drew the short stick, as I mentioned before, so in starting the company. And that's it, you know, that's where it's, you know, that's where it's evolved, right? You know, we started working the concept, doing some initial seed funding around that, filing some initial IP and, you know, freedom of operation, you know, did all the stuff that you're supposed to do as a small startup, right? Getting going. And then we've just evolved the design since then, right? So our first in human we did in 2019, we finished that up, and now we're on the second generation device. So a lot's happened from concept to first generation to now second generation device, and getting ready to put that second generation device or get to a point where we can put it into a feasibility study and back in humans is going to be a nice milestone.
Speaking of IP, what does that look like now? Have you guys, do you have granted patents at this point? Do you have some pending, or give us the status?
Yeah, so we have four issued patents in the U.S. We've had patents issued outside of the U.S. as well. We actually, earlier this year, we just got our first European patent issued, and then we went into national filings on that. So we're in 10 different countries now with that initial patent. And I just got word too that we got a second European patent that went through as well. So we'll be following suit there. The good part about this is, you know, the four initial patents that went through in the US, it's a great foundation of our base and our core technology. And we've built on that and added the, you know, new intellectual property on top of that and continue to file that. Obviously, the U.S. Being the, you know, the stronghold for the, you know, for the business and the side of things, but it's good to have those European patents as well. And we're actually in Japan, China, and Australia, and Brazil. So some good traction there globally for our IP.
That's great. Give us a sense of the next year. What are the milestones that you're hoping to accomplish in the next 12 months? As we're sitting here this time next year, what do you expect to have done?
Yeah, you know, and I'll comment real quick, you know, COVID, we all have experienced COVID, and it, you know, it did set us back, you know, substantially over the last, we thought it'd only be like a 6-month run or a 1-year run. We weren't sure, right? But here we are, we're still, you know, we're still filtering through that. But I think we've, been able to keep our head above water and drive forward and achieve some significant milestones. So what we were able to do over the course of the last year is continue that second generation device, get it into design freeze, get it ready so that we could move into verification and validation and get ready to do a submission with FDA for a feasibility study. So going into 2022, got to get used to saying that, right? We're coming around the corner on that. Sure. You know, when we need to secure some additional financing around that. But once that's in place, we'll be driving hard and fast towards this feasibility study to confirm that next generation design. Once we confirm that, we'll use that information, that data, to basically inform our process for moving into a market approval study for a pivotal 510K study in the US.
That's great. And speaking of financing, what are you looking to raise? Kind of give us a sense of what you've done to date, where are you, and what do you need over the next 18 months?
Yeah, so historically, we closed a Series B at $7.2 million. That was just prior to that first in human clinical study around October of 2018. Then we followed that with the moving into that modification and that second generation device and basically weathering the storm here with COVID with an additional $2 million in convertible or bridge note. We're looking to raise anywhere between $8 and $12 million on our Series B, so this next round. And with that, that'll take us all the way through that feasibility study. We're targeting up to about 15 patients, three clinical sites in the U.S. And then that funding also will support, you know, operations and the process and planning for going into that FDA clinical study and an IDE submission with the FDA for that pivotal study.
That's great. And I want to get back to JP Morgan and tie that into financing here in a minute, but give us a sense of what else is on the market. So for somebody not familiar with this space, who are the competitors? There's been some industry activity. Why don't you share some of the things that have gone on there that are material for you guys?
Yeah, so the space is a little interesting, right? So there's only one FDA approved device in the space. That's the Sentinel device. Boston Scientific had acquired Claret Medical for that technology back in 2018. And that's the only device that's available right now in the US. And I think there's one other device that's available in Europe, but it's Sentinel's pretty much the predominant device that's being utilized globally. So really only one competitor in the market space. On that note, they're a partial protection solution. You know, and our chief medical officer, Dr. Michael Reardon, you know, he's a strong proponent of, you know, embolic protection, and likes to make the comment too that, you know, even though Sentinel is partial protection, it's better than no protection at all, right? And so I think that's really kind of driving the market and setting the stage that embolic protection is clearly needed, and we're hopeful that we'll see a benefit on that as we move forward. There's some large randomized study that Boston Scientific is doing right now called the Protected TAVR study. We believe that that study will be positive, and when that comes out, it'll certainly continue to validate that the embolic protection is needed. You know, I think it's worth noting that the reason that Boston is doing that large study of around 3,000 patients, they initially got their FDA approval on a failed clinical study. They missed their primary endpoint. But it's also interesting too, when you look at some of the percentages out there, and I think it's just off the cuff, it's around 62% market adoption for the Sentinel device. You know, for that kind of adoption, you know, on a failed clinical study, right, basically, and being able to, you know, only provide partial protection, I think it speaks volumes that, yeah, it's going to be important for the study to come out. But I think folks really understand that intuitively you need to be able to, you know, we need to protect that brain. It just makes good sense. And that's kind of where we're going to fall into place, is with maximum protection, you know, broadening that, exception for maximum protection and, you know, kind of adding in and hitting that unmet clinical need, that Sentinel is not totally addressing yet.
That's great. And that's obviously pivotal. You're heading to JP Morgan in a number of weeks, and it'll be interesting to see how JP Morgan plays out this year, but you're setting up meetings with investors, and you guys, as you mentioned, are raising capital. What kinds of investors are you looking for? How have you structured the round? And do you have availability at JP Morgan for anybody listening that might have an interest in learning more about what you're doing?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, we're going to be heading out there. You know, JP Morgan just went 100% virtual, as we all know. I think that we're heading out that way. But that, you know, that hasn't stopped us. We're going to be out there Sunday, the January 9th through the 12th. We already have several meetings that are lined up. And, you know, the types of investors that we're looking for, are anyone that's really interested in, you know, compassionate about, you know, protecting a patient, you know, from stroke and various things like that in the cardiovascular space. So, you know, we're happy to talk to just about anybody that is interested to lead the round or wants to syndicate into that round. Again, as I mentioned, you know, we're looking for between 8 and 12 million as a, you know, for the Series B. We also have a bridge note mechanism in there as well. So, you know, if there's some smaller investors that are interested in, you know, getting into this space and wanting to, you know, put some money down, we certainly have that as an option as well.
That's great. And maybe just to add to that, what's the size of this market? So we know there's one other competitor in the market. There's been some validation there. We know what the exit on that is, but what's the total addressable market here?
So we, you know, we look at it, cerebral embolic protection globally as about a $1 billion market just for the TAVR procedure, right? There's other procedures, obviously, that are going to benefit. We all know that there's stroke rates that are higher than 1% in mitral valve, tricuspid, left atrial appendage. And then, you know, even, you know, you get to that point where we validated embolic protection, you know, why not use it for, you know, other procedures like coronary intervention, like I mentioned before with our one of our co-founders and conceptual inventor. So, you know, it kind of becomes that seatbelt, you know, you going to get in the car, you're going to put it on, right? So, you know, the market size, though, globally, you know, when you look at TAVR is, you know, somewhere between $10 billion and $12.5 billion, you know, by 2026, 2028, you know, and that's where that $1 billion market opportunity comes from, is just for that TAVR space. So it's substantially large. And, you know, it's, you know, who wouldn't want to have their brain protected? You know, if you knew that there's possibility of particles and debris that could cause a stroke and it's greater than, you know, 1% chance, you're certainly going to walk into that procedure and say, "Hey doc, you know, I want to have my brain protected during this procedure because it's important. You know, I want to come out and be healthy and have a quality of life."
Yep. Obviously it makes sense. Eric, anything you want to add before we wrap up in terms of what you're working on, how people can help in terms of, we've covered investment. Are there any other things you're looking for? Are you looking for medical advisors? What else do you guys need? Or is it really at this point, get the capital and get to the next step?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tobin. So, you know, with the financing coming through, once we, you know, lock that in, we're going to be expanding our team substantially. So, you know, we're going to be looking at hiring some key hires into, you know, some high executive type roles or senior management type roles, to help support and continue to build the company as we move forward. You know, that primary goal is, you know, hitting that milestone of that feasibility. That's kind of a smaller team right now. But as we start to build and get through that, because we believe pretty strongly that, you know, the outcomes of that feasibility are going to be positive, you know, we're going to need to strengthen our team going into that pivotal study. You know, outside of that, you know, we've got a good following of some great KOLs and some great medical advisors. But, you know, it's always good to always hear from other folks that are passionate about cerebral embolic protection and protecting the brain. And, you know, I have an open door and my number's on our website. So reach out and give me a shout.
All right, great. Well, Eric, thanks for your time. We'll put your information in the show notes so people can access you, and look forward to continuing to watch the company grow and have a successful 2022. Thanks again for being on, and love to catch up after JP Morgan and see how that goes.
You betcha. Thanks, Tobin, for having me on today.
See you again soon for the next episode of Innovation for Alpha. Make sure to go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.